From our performance studio here at Spokane Public Radio, that was pianist and composer Bogdan Ota. And he has been living for a time now in Post Falls, Idaho. We're going to get to know him a little bit more as he gets into the studio here. And I'd like to welcome Bogdan to our Spokane Public Radio studios. And Bogdan, again, welcome. And tell us a little bit about the piece that you just played.
Thank you for having me here. Hello, everyone. The piece that I just played was the piano version of the song When Angels Die. It's on my last album, Bliss. It has a sad history. Back in the first year of university, I had a girlfriend, and she was in a very advanced stage of diabetes, and eventually she died. And I heard about that pretty late after the funeral. I met her mom, and she told me the story and how she died, and that made me really, really sad. And I've met people all my life who would say about their children when, you know, they lose them, "Oh, it was an angel. You should have met her. You should have met him. He was an angel. She was an angel." And, you know, being inspired by all these sad stories, I just created a soundtrack for this. And when I say When Angels Die, the title of the song, I don't mean the angels in heaven. Obviously, they're immortal. But, you know, our angels here on earth, our children.
Oh, very good. Have you always been a composer?
Yes, I've started to compose music. I remember my first composition was when I was 10, the song that I first wrote down. And when I saw that I'm able to do this, that became my life goal, to be able to compose and perform my music.
Very good. So everyone should know that you come to us ultimately from Romania, where you were born and you were raised, and you had at least the first part of your musical education there, of course, as a child, but your university education was...
It's still in Romania. My entire music education for about 18 years, I was a music student in Romania. First 12 years of school, gymnasium, high school, and then 6 years of university and master's.
And throughout that time, you were a specialist in piano. You were a concert pianist by the time you were well along in that process of education. But the music that, well, it's a little bit elusive, so I think I'll just put it on you to define as best you can, the music that you write and your own individual style. How would you best describe that?
It was a challenge for me to put myself in a box. It was, and it still is. And luckily, here in the United States, I found out that there is a main genre that will fit my style into as well, called neoclassical. And in this neoclassical is where I fit best. Some people try to put me in a catalog of world music. Some other people, you know, music critics, try to put me in New Age. Obviously, I'm not there. It's not really Zen. My music is not really New Age. And neoclassical will describe it best. Now, the connection between my neoclassical music and the music that I've studied, and according with my degree, like you said, I'm a concert pianist. I'm still playing Chopin back home on my grand piano and Beethoven sonatas. But like I said, I always knew that I'm going to be a composer and I want to perform my music, but I wouldn't be able to compose like this or to perform like this without a very strong classical education. So I needed Mozart to teach me, I needed Rachmaninoff to teach me, I needed Chopin to teach me. What I decided later by talking to people, I'm a pretty grounded person. I'm always talking to people and I'm looking for their feedback on not only on my music, but on any type of music. When I was talking with a lot of people who are not connoisseurs, who are not in the classical music industry business, so to speak. And I'm asking them, what do you think about Rachmaninoff Concerto No. 2? They don't know what's that. I'm playing them a couple of fragments, and they're like, oh my God, this is nice. Oh, I love it. What's that? And then I send them the link on YouTube, and they will listen to the whole concerto. And I say, okay, what do you think about that? Yeah, you know, some fragments I like, some of them are boring. If you talk with people from different backgrounds, you cannot expect that they would like 100% one classical piece. Mm-hmm. Romantic, post-romantic is not, I will just say classical for now. So what I tried to do with my music, I tried to, by gathering all this feedback from people who are not classical music lovers, is to put together themes and to develop those themes as little as possible so it doesn't become boring for the regular guy in the audience. Because if you perform the main themes of a piano concerto, everyone will say, oh my God, it's fantastic. If you play the re-exposition of the concerto or the development part in the middle or where the composer is playing with the themes and everything is, intertwined. And for most of the people, music becomes complicated. Mm-hmm. Then as a composer, you end up writing for elitists. The elitists are not going to make you happy as a composer. You're going to have about 20 people in your concert hall. If you make music for the people, okay, you lower a little bit the music composition standards. You make it more simple, more accessible. You can play with the orchestration a little bit to make it more complicated, but so they can have it in their ear and whistle it, hum it when they come out of a concert hall. Then I think you're successful.
Right. Anton Webern, of course, famously said that in the future, the postman would be whistling his tunes, but that didn't come to pass. And I understand what you're saying in terms of the complexity. I mean, for many of us, something like a major Bach fugue, or even to go at one better, something like the Goldberg Variations or the Art of Fugue, which is just kind of endlessly creative, which is its strong point and for some a stumbling block in terms of approaching it. Of all those composers who you mentioned who are rattling around in your head as the voices that speak to you when you compose, is there one composer or is there a set of composers who you feel have an outsized influence on you or whose style, whose approach to music is something that informs you more than others?
I have a pretty short list, to be honest. I would start with Mozart. He's like a god to mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And then Beethoven, Chopin, Rachmaninoff in the post-romantic era, a little bit of Tchaikovsky. I'm very attracted to Chopin and Rachmaninoff. That would be something that I always play in my car. I never get tired of the fifth the five concerts and the Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini. Mm, mm-hmm. Even my wife and my kids, they ask me, Daddy, it's four
Do
years
we have
now,
to
we
hear
still
Rachmaninoff
have that.
Again.
Yeah, everywhere we're going is just Rachmaninoff. I cannot get enough of it.
I'm curious, and I think that is a fairly clear influence from what I've heard of your music. I'm curious, though, of what part St. Mozart plays. I mean, obviously, we're talking about a completely different harmonic vocabulary, mm-hmm. and there's a big hunk of time between Mozart, when Mozart lived, and say, even Chopin, and then on to Rachmaninoff.
A lot of people, and I bet many of the people who are listening right now, this radio station, they've seen the film Amadeus. For me, is the best thing that can happen to someone is to be as inspired as Mozart was. And I will make a very short you know, brackets here about his death.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone remembers the last scene in the movie when Mozart, he was in pain, he was dying, and he was not whining. He was like, oh my God, I'm dying. I want to see my family. Where's my daughter? Let me hold her hand, or my son. But instead, he heard in Lacrimosa and in Dies Irae, he heard all those voices of angels, and he dictated them, you know. And I think this is the ultimate stage an artist can reach when you are in between two worlds, the world of the living, the world of the dead. You can hear the music from the other side and leave it as a testament here on earth. From this point of view, I don't think anyone can equal Mozart from this point of view. On the other hand, considering that, you know, it's a few hundreds of years, and Mozart, of course, back then he didn't get the respect he deserved, and so on. He was not in the grace of the court in Vienna and so on. But he was an innovator. And the opera was big in Italy, not in Germany. And this composer put it brilliantly on stage, and he amazed everyone. All of a sudden, he became an archenemy for the opera writers back then. In my style, I think I borrowed a couple of composition, orchestration techniques from Mozart, even in this song, in When Angels Die. But like I said, I created my own style. I'm not copying Mozart, or I'm not copying Rachmaninoff, and I'm not interested in doing that.
Speaking of your music and your style, it's really past time for us to note the fact that you have a performance coming up very quickly.
Yeah, in Post Falls at the Jacqueline and Arts Performing Arts Center on January 17th at 7 p.m., I'm going to have a concert, Bogdan Ota, and it's going to be a cocktail hour, a short cocktail hour, and, you know, I can talk to people and sign autographs and, give CDs and so on. And it's a beautiful location, and the acoustics in that room are just amazing. So I'm inviting everyone to come. There's plenty of room. And I just want people for 1 hour to dream, to transpose themselves in a different world, to leave the bills behind, the mortgage and so on, and to just enjoy music.
And speaking of your music, this will be a piano recital.
It's a piano, yes.
Piano recital of your own music. Now, much of what you write goes beyond the world of the piano. And if you could tell us, when did you start moving in that direction of writing instrumentally beyond piano? And how has that changed over the years? How have you developed your style of writing for instruments?
I was afraid to write for a symphonic orchestra. I've always seen a symphonic orchestra like a big monster that if you don't master it, he's going to eat you alive. It's very easy to make mistakes for a symphonic orchestra, and you need to study frequencies. I did not study orchestration in the university. I'm a performing artist. I was in a different department. I'm self-taught in orchestration. I always wanted my music to sound big and to be epic and to move people, to bring them, to send them and bring them back in a different world. I didn't want anything earthly. And I realized that the synthesizers, which I was taking care of in that moment, I was composing with them, they're not enough to transmit what I wanted to. So even if I'm afraid of that monster, I would have to learn how to harness it, you know, and to work with it. So I've learned how to do big orchestrations like this, and I was inspired by the film music.
Mm-hmm.
Film music composed here in the United States, and this is the main reason I moved to the United States. I've seen the good taste in music of the American people. Otherwise, we wouldn't have those soundtracks in these beautiful Hollywood productions, right? If people don't like them, they will penalize the composer. Right? And people like John Williams and Hans Zimmer, they will always amaze me. And What gave me courage, it was actually Hans Zimmer that gave me courage to start doing, you know, big orchestral scores.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was not an expert either when he started with that. But doesn't mean if you start to do something, you release an album tomorrow. There's time to make mistakes. There's time to learn, to listen, to re-listen, to delete, to cut, add more, take some, and so on. But my main inspirational source to start in to the orchestral part of the composition, it was the American film music industry.
Well, certainly there's much really fine music being written for films these days, and any number of composers who are really first rate at what they do, and their work is appreciated. Just a little anecdote here, because one of the most popular new recordings that I've introduced here is one done by the Canadian violinist Angèle Dubois. And she just released an album of some of her favorites. And what is common to all the composers represented on the album is they all are active writers for film, or in some cases did write for film. They're no longer with us. So that is one of the major genres of music where people are listening, people are tuned in, and people are interested in it. And have you ever thought of doing any film scoring, or would you like to do some film scoring?
I did this. My first film scoring was for the movie Sirenen in Norway. It received some awards, Norwegian awards.
Mm-hmm.
My name is on IMDb.
Okay.
Website, yeah, with mm-hmm. this film. It was a psychological film, psychological trauma, and that would be my specialty, so to speak. When it comes to psychological films or things that are not from this world, I think I know how to do that. If someone would ask me, can you make a soundtrack for Alice in Wonderland or something, you know, happy, cheerful,
mm-hmm.
I'm not the guy. Unfortunately,
you never know. One of these days, you may wake up and decide that that's the kind of score that you just need to write here.
Probably.
I think it'd be good if we had a sample of some of your other style. Should we go with the CD? Would you like to select
one? Yeah, the song Bliss is the name of the CD is Bliss, and the song Bliss is the track number 2. And that song was actually inspired. Sent to me, let me put it like this, because I don't know how my brain can receive otherwise this type of music. In the Great Canyon, I've been in Utah,
mm-hmm.
and I've spent a few hours starting with 2 a.m. looking at the stars. I realized how small we are, though how important for the entire universe. I came back home, I was alone on the motorcycle, and I could hear those themes, and I just kissed my wife and my kids hello, I have to go in the recording studio. And
uh-huh.
2 weeks later, I came out with this huge hybrid orchestration that is Bliss.
All right. Let's give it a listen. Music by our guest in studio today, Bogdan Ota.
Thank you.
Music by our guest here in the Spokane Public Radio Studios, Bogdan Otov, from his album Bliss. That was the title tune. Very, very satisfying music, I find it to be. And is that kind of indicative of your style? If we were playing just like in music school, there's the infamous drop the needle test, where you just pick up a recording of a piece and then it's your job to identify the composer. So was this typical of your style of writing, the piece that we just heard?
No. My typical style is the songs like the one I've opened this radio show with, and another one that I choose for the ending of the radio show. This is a big hybrid orchestration, and it's not something that I'm doing often because I still want to keep it as real as possible. And if you go with a Philharmonic on stage and try to perform Bliss live, it's close to impossible. Without the synths in the background and the big cinematic percussion like taiko drums and this hybrid electronic percussion that I'm also using, the music doesn't have the same impact. So my style would be more classical. The someone will recognize Bogdan Otav by listening to Harald's Dream, the song that may be famous in Norway's Got Talent, or Story of My Life, which is something that any orchestra and pianist can play and still sound good.
Sure. Well, maybe I think we have just enough time if you wanted to play that second piece for us in our studio. And while you're getting out there, I will remind everybody that Bogdan Otav is going to be performing later this week on the 17th, Friday evening, at the Jacqueline Arts and Cultural Center in Post Falls. So if you would like a fine evening of music, you can get yourself out to listen to him. And he's going to take us out right now.